Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Goals on Film, Edge of the Crowd's dedicated sports movies podcast. I'm your host, Jason, and I've got Stewie with me today. How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks, Jace. How are you going? I almost called you Stewie then, so I think that's a little window into how I'm doing, but pumped to get into the movie, pal.
Nice. Stewie, I can almost hear you a bit better.
Yeah, it's like you're in the same place.
In the same house?
Maybe. How weird.
Wow.
If you're hiding in my attic, mate, that's it. I told you once, I told you before. Come to my house. Don't come to my roof, okay?
You'll let me in?
Maybe. We'll see.
That's good, because this episode is being broadcast to you live from Broken Hill, essentially. We're both here now, so we don't have to contend with time zones or anything like that. You know, we sort of know each other's schedules now as well, so we don't need to contend with that. And it's easier for the listeners, maybe.
It's a good time. Rather than messaging back and forth on Slack, trying to create a time that works for both of us, we just sat across from each other. It took about 15 seconds yesterday. Want to record tomorrow night? Yeah. Okay. Simple as that. Very good. I'm happy to have you. Always happy to have you as a colleague on the podcast. And it's great to have you as a colleague in the editorial room as well, mate.
Thank you. All right. Well, let's get into this week's episode of Goals on Film. And this week we are celebrating the World Series against the Phillies and the Astros. And we're taking a look at 1989 sports comedy film Major League. Just to give you a bit of a rundown of what this movie is about, it basically follows the Cleveland Indians in the 1988 or 1989 season. And essentially, they've got a new owner, a former showgirl named Rachel Phelps, who has sort of inherited the team after her father dies. She's presented a deal to move the team to Miami, but to break the lease with the city of Cleveland, ticket sales have to plummet and the season attendance has to be under 800,000. So in order to do this and move the team to Miami, or have the best shot at moving the team to Miami, Phelps hires the most incompetent players available, including a near-blind pitcher, Ricky Vaughn, an injury-prone catcher, Jake Taylor, among many others from past minor leagues, other, you know, juvenile leagues really as well. But her villainous tactics accidentally foster a can-do team spirit, turning the Indians into potential winners. And so the Indians do enough in the back end of the season after learning of Rachel's plan, and eventually they win the league championship over the Yankees and essentially save the team. So, Stewie, looking at that and obviously watching the movie, what are your initial thoughts on the movie? What do you like? What don't you like?
I just want to preface my thoughts with this is a classic. This is a classic baseball movie. As I definitely remembered myself and didn't need Jason's prompting to, he asked me if I could play catch or hit off any player in baseball. I did say Ricky Vaughn, because I thought if I could hit off Ricky Vaughn, I could hit anybody. Anyway, I just want to say this is a classic movie. Maybe because we watch sports movies week in, week out, Jace. I just felt a little bit jaded by, you know, the trope of the scrappy team, scrappy underdogs just coming through and winning the championship. I just thought that's a bit tired, but you can't put that on this movie. This is a classic movie. It's part of that golden era of baseball films that we've spoken about in previous podcasts. So it was a solid movie. And for all the people out there that were wondering what I gave this on IMDb, I rated this many years ago and I gave it a 7 out of 10.
Very nice. No, I think that I agree with your analysis there. I think that it is a really classic movie. It's one that you sort of always go back to. And I think that it's loved by fans and it's loved by people who are more involved in baseball as well. And especially at that top level, like they always seem to go back to this movie, especially obviously its connections to MLB, using, you know, many of the team names, mostly the Indians, who are now the Cleveland Guardians, after a name change for this season. But I think that, yeah, just it's all of its connections to real life in terms of MLB, I think, hold it in a really high standing and placing among baseball fans and baseball players at sort of any level. And I think that it just does become a movie that, you know, you remember really well. and sort of sticks with you, and you do sort of come back to it just because of the nature of, yeah, it being in sort of a golden era. But I think that it's sort of one of, if not like the standout maybe of the golden era.
Absolutely. It's definitely up there. It's the best one. There's three contenders. You can tell me if you think I'm right or wrong here. I think out of that golden era, the ones that have stood the test of time, Field of Dreams, this movie, Major League, and A League of Their Own. I'd say that it's probably a three-way tie for the best one. They're the three standouts. One other thing I wanted to touch on that you just mentioned then as well. You talked about the MLB and their franchises, essentially endorsing the movie. I think, and this touches back on a point Dan made on last week's episode, Any Given Sunday. If you haven't listened to it, give it a listen. It's a great episode. In that movie, so the NFL didn't want to have anything to do with it. They didn't want any of their teams having anything to do with it. It just adds to the authenticity of this movie that it's real deal baseball teams. It's the MLB, and you see a litany of other teams in the many montages and stuff. So yeah, that's something about this movie I really enjoyed.
Question for you though, Stewie, before we move on to references of history, would you ever think that this movie could have an alternate ending, or believe that this movie could have an alternate ending away from what it was?
Well, Jason, you've been on my case about researching these movies that we go on. I can't just watch them and wing it. Previous to about half an hour ago, I would have said no, but why don't you let the listeners know what you found out, mate?
All right, so this was actually meant to be the film's original ending, before what we see and what was obviously part of the DVD. Or, and it was Rachel Phelps admitting before the final game that her bitchy persona was all an act in order to fire up the players. She says that they hadn't had a good season, the team might have gone bankrupt, but audiences preferred the bitchy Rachel, so the ending was reshot to show her misery when the Indians won.
Yeah, I think that plays better, like the ending that we got, as opposed to that alternate ending. I don't know if I would have liked that alternate ending. What about you?
No, I don't think so. I think, like, you're sort of, it's built up. Rachel is built up to be this bitchy character. And I think that, having a sort of like 180 turn, right at the end, being like, it was all an act, it was all a ruse. Like, I just like think that would have taken away from what the movie actually was and what that and who that character was as well. And so I don't think I would have liked it.
Yeah, she's essentially her and the New York Yankees are the antagonists of this movie, and just would have killed her as a as an antagonist. Probably would have hurt the rewatchability of the movie, I reckon.
Yeah, maybe. All right, we'll move into references to history now. And the first one, I actually want to come back to the Rachel Phelps character. And her plan to move the Indians was inspired by real life events. It was inspired by real life Minnesota Twins owner Kelvin Griffith, who in the 1970s, during the planning stages of constructing the Metrodome Stadium, Griffiths negotiated for an escape clause in the team's lease, which said that if the Twins' home attendance was under 1.4 million per season for 3 consecutive years, the team could be released from its contract and leave Minnesota. Like the Phelps character, Griffiths let quality players depart via free agency and used cheap, inexperienced rookies and has-beens. The Twins lost 102 games in their first year at the Metrodome in 1982, 92 games the year afterwards, and they had attendance under 900,000 in each of those 2 seasons or 3 seasons. A group of investors from Tampa bought 42% of the team, and the Twins were on the verge of moving to Florida. And yeah, essentially, like the situation was avoided in the end, because Griffiths sold the Twins to another person, and the Tampa Group sold its minority stock to that new owner as well. And yeah, that was essentially cut everything to do with that plan by Griffith. But no, I think that yeah, Miami was like a usual option. And so when this movie came out, and essentially these events that were happening sort of 10, 15 years prior to this movie coming out as well, the Miami Marlins, who are the MLB team in the area at the moment, like they weren't created at the time. So it was sort of a location that I guess like MLB teams could sort of pursue or, you know, find a new market for. And so, you know, there was that situation. There was also a situation of the Seattle Mariners as well in 1995, again, prior to the Marlins being created. And yeah, so I think that that was the case with a lot of these situations and scenarios with these teams.
Yeah, it's incredible, and this is another conversation for another podcast. But the interchangeability and the franchiseness, for lack of a better term, of American sporting teams, I imagine it will make it difficult for locals. You know, we've experienced it to a smaller extent in Aussie rules. I guess it was a merger as opposed to a franchise relocation, but I just don't imagine it going down too well with locals when you want to uproot the team, you know.
No, probably not. And I think that, yeah, we did talk about this. I don't know in what episode, but it was one of them. You can go listen back to see which one it was. Just listen to all of them to check. But I think that, you know, you asked me a question of whether if Richmond moved to like Darwin or something, whether I'd still support them. And I think like that's the sort of conversation that we, you know, are sort of having here as well, maybe.
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly what I'm alluding to, the merger. But like Jason said, go back, listen to them all. Not a better way to spend your weekend.
Absolutely. We'll just wrap up this particular point of discussion in saying that 4 years after the release of this movie, Miami was ex awarded an expansion team that would go on to win the World Series after just 5 seasons in 1997. The ironic part about this is they beat a heavily favored Cleveland team.
Wow, how incredible.
All right. Throughout the movie, you would have seen Bob Ecker. He played Harry Doyle in the film, who was the broadcaster for all of Cleveland's games, whether they were home or away. And director David Ward had chosen Ecker because of his acting work in Miller Lite ads and on a sitcom called Mr. Belvedere. It wasn't until Ward met Ecker did he learn that Ecker had been for almost 20 years the radio broadcaster for the Milwaukee Brewers.
Wow. So literally he was ready to go. I think I read during my research that when he wasn't filming, he was calling their games because it was filmed during the season, right?
I believe so. I trust your research there, Stewie.
Millions wouldn't, mate, but thank you.
Yeah, and so part of you know Ecker's sort of honors, I guess, or he I think I saw somewhere that he is still commentating as well, actually. And he's the third longest serving commentator of a single team at the moment.
Absolutely, and famously did backstage commentary at WrestleMania 3.
Yeah, so one of his lines, just a bit outside, became one of the film's more memorable and imitated catchphrases. It wasn't actually in the script.
Vaughn into the windup in his first offering. Just a bit outside. He tried the corner and missed. Ball four. Ball eight. Low, and Vaughn has walked the bases loaded on 12 straight pitches.
And so I think speaking to his sort of potential about, well, not really potential because we know that he's a proven sportscaster, but I think just like his ability to, you know, say these phrases on the fly, you know, work with what he's seeing in front of him and just, you know, come up with these catchphrases that weren't in the script, I think just, you know, lends itself to sort of his you know, his calling in terms of being a sportscaster. And I think that you'd feel a bit safe in casting a sportscaster into this role because they can just, you know, easily enough sort of just like bring their own into the role. And you know, it's if it's what they've been doing for 20 years or even now, you know, almost 50 years, I think it is. I don't know if my maths is off there, probably. But like, you know, I think you know what you're going to get by casting someone who is, you know, proven to be so successful in a role already.
Absolutely. I think it's fair to say they were definitely in a safe pair of hands with Bob Ecker.
Except Stewie, and I told you this earlier, We're going to geography school early now.
Jason's geography school. Take us to school, mate. Tell us what happened.
So when Clue Hayward hits a home run off Vaughn at Yankee Stadium, Harry Doyle says that ball is headed for South America. Left field, it was hit to left field. Left field at old Yankee Stadium actually faced east, which meant that the home run ball would have headed towards Europe, which is east of the United States.
These movie producers, they need to get you on as a consultant, mate, just so you can let them know that directionally they're okay. You're talking about callings. Bob Bucher's calling for calling. That could be your calling, mate. Ooh. Directional assistance to the stars.
All right. Well, I'll await a call from any director about that sort of stuff then. While not particularly specified, many of the players in the movie seem to be based on or inspired by former Major League stars. And we get a couple of connections, I guess, to these stars and like sort of what they're known for as well. And so I'll just run you through a couple. Pedro Serrano, he is partly based on Orlando Cepeda and Wade Boggs, who would superstitiously eat chicken before every game. And, you know, obviously Serrano had that superstition before each game as well.
Yeah, that's incredible. Pedro Serrano, all-timer of a character. I love, he just eats up the scenes. I love that guy. And I think he went on to play the president in the Kiefer Sutherland Show 24.
Oh, yeah.
After Major League, obviously. Sorry, just had to get my Serrano love out there, mate. I mean, fantastic character. I'm love sure. Jobu as well.
En este momento, para que me des el poder, para conquistar el fútbol, te daré mi devoción para siempre poderoso.
¿Qué pasa there, Pedro?
Bats. The acid. I cannot hit curveball. Straight ball, I hit it very much. Curveball, bats are afraid. I asked Jobu to come. Take fear, bats. I offer him cigar. Wrong. He will come.
You know, you might think about taking Jesus Christ as your savior instead of fooling around with all this stuff.
Shit, Harris.
Ah. Jesus, I like him very much. He no help curveball.
You trying to say Jesus Christ can't hit a curveball?
Okay, Harris, let's not start a holy war here.
Wouldn't leave a rum sitting around out here with this group.
It's very bad. Steal Jobu's rum. Very bad.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll hear a lot more of Pedro Serrano love when we talk about the actors and their characters. Ryan Duran was the inspiration for the character Ricky Wild Thing Vaughn, and Eddie Harris appears to be inspired by Gaylord Perry, who is well known for using outside substances to enhance his pitches.
Oh, that is a gross scene. Gross scene when he's showing all his stuff and then he's like, and if none of them work, I just use a little bit of snot.
Get on your chest.
Crisco. Bardol. Vagisil. Any one of them will give you another 2 to 3 inches drop on your curveball. Of course, if the umps are watching me close, I just rub a little jalapeno inside my nose, get it running, and if I need to load the ball up a little, just wipe my nose.
You put snot on the ball?
I haven't got an arm like yours. I gotta put anything on it I can find. Someday you will too.
Horrible.
I wonder now, like MLB umpires like check pitches like caps and stuff now just for those substances.
Yeah, absolutely. But what do you do when it's snot? Like, that's just a bodily function. What are they looking up their nostrils or something? Maybe they should start. That's, that grossed me out.
Yeah, it was definitely gross. And Willie Mays Hayes, he has a couple of scenes or a couple of lines that he has, which are references to specific baseballers as well.
Hey!
recognize this guy?
Say hey! Billy Mays Hayes here. Play like Mays, and I run like Hayes. How you doing? How you doing? My man.
Lou Brown. Nice to meet you, Hayes. The parking lot is right out there.
Thanks.
In one instance, he says he can hit like Mays. He's referring to Willie Mays. He is a former Major League Baseballer. He spent 22 seasons playing for the New York Yankees and San Francisco Giants before finishing with the Mets. And when Willie says he runs like Hayes, he's referring to Bullet Bob Hayes. He won gold in the 100-meter dash at the 1964 Tokyo Olympics with a then-record time of 10 seconds and 0.06 seconds, and he was considered the world's fastest human.
Yeah, Bullet Bob. Shout out to Bullet Bob. Always been a hero of mine.
One of the other, references to history was when Jake Taylor, I think it was, steps up to the plate for, you know, to drive in the winning run or hope to drive in the winning run.
Mm-hmm.
He points up to the skies. And it's a pretty powerful scene. He does it the first time and gets the ball thrown at him.
The chin music he cops.
Yeah, pretty much, which I find it strange how I'm pretty sure Wild Thing got thrown out of the game for doing that in the first instance. And this Yankees pitcher was allowed to do it and just continue in the game. So I think that was really unfair on Wild Thing.
Mm-hmm. Bloody Yankees.
Everyone hates the Yankees. But I mean, I am going to reference the Yankees player with this one as well, because Jake Taylor pointing to the sky is a reference to Babe Ruth doing the same thing. And the commentator mentions it at the time as well, but it was essentially, Babe Ruth pointing to the sky, basically calling a shot. And he actually hit a home run. It was against the Chicago Cubs in game 3 of the 1932 World Series. He made a pointing gesture, which, you know, became a home run. And so it was essentially preempting what he was going to do, sort of pointing to the stands, being like, I'm going to hit a home run. But there's been a bit of a discussion about whether he actually was pointing to the skies or pointing to the stands saying that he'll get a home run. Some other people think that he was just gesturing to fans. He was gesturing to the other team. Apparently it remains in dispute, but I don't know what you think, Stewie, but I also don't know what Jake Taylor might have been thinking in this particular scenario. Obviously, he laid down a bunt instead and didn't a large hit, but I don't know. When you see someone pointing to the sky, what's your first thought on what they're thinking?
Listen, I got no time for the discourse around this. My headcanon is Babe Ruth pointed to the sky and because he was going to hit a home run and then went ahead and hit the home run. One of the most baller things to ever happen in sports, I think. So forget all the other nonsense. Let's just say he was pointing for a home run.
Let's remember it for what it is and what happened, what eventuated.
Absolutely.
Fair enough. The Yankees are described as the defending American League champions. At the time of the movie's release, the Yankees had last won the American League pennant in 1981. It was the Oakland Athletics that were the American League champions the year of filming, so 1988, release and post-release. So, Oakland Athletics were the AL champions in 88, 89, and 90. The Athletics swept the San Francisco Giants to win the World Series in the release year of the movie.
Yeah, the Oakland A's, they're just not as good of villains as the New York Yankees, though, right? Just going on the name. You just go, yeah, definitely hate the Yankees. A's, take them or leave them.
In a scene where Jake invades Lynn's party, one of the guests asks Jake how much money he makes in the majors. He replies by saying that he makes the league minimum. At the time, in 1989, the MLB salary minimum was $68,000. Average household income in 1990 was roughly $30,000. So apparently he was making a very respectable double the average household income.
Old Jake was doing all right, wasn't he?
I reckon, yeah. And the opponent slugger known as Yankees home run threat Hayward was played by former pitcher of the Milwaukee Brewers, Peter Vukovich. He was one of, I think, a couple or a few former major league players to make a bit of a cameo, or more than just a cameo, sort of have a sort of standing presence in the movie. Vukovich never hit a single home run in his entire 11-year major league career. During 8 of those 11 years, he never made a single plate appearance since he was pitching in the American League, which uses a designated hitter to bat for the pitcher. But obviously, in this movie, you can draw up anything you want. And so Peter Vukovich playing Hayward with the Yankees was a home run hitter. All right. We'll just end the references to history with a few little fun facts. In real life, Charlie Sheen, who plays Ricky the Wild Thing Vaughn, he is actually an avid fan of the Cincinnati Reds baseball team, not the Cleveland Indians. And so I don't know what Charlie Sheen would have felt by having the Indians on his jersey and playing an Indians baseballer when he goes for the team that, you know, plays in the same state.
Direct rivals. That would have been rough. No Jack Nicholson behavior.
No. But David Ward, the director, he was actually a lifelong Cleveland Indians fan. His inspiration for the film, in creating the film, was simply because he thought it would be the only way he would ever see the Indians actually win anything.
Good for him.
I'm glad that he was able to achieve that, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I'm not sure if, I don't think the Cleveland Indians have won a World Series since this movie came out.
Right.
Been to the World Series in 2016, but were beaten by the Cubs.
Right.
Who broke, I think it was like, yeah.
Their own curse, yep.
80-year curse. You know, the Indians were going through their own curse at the same time, so...
Absolutely. And the Indians will never win one now because they're the Guardians.
Yeah.
So there's that.
Well, they did get close this year. They did make the postseason this year and had a pretty good run. All right. We'll move on now and talk about how well this movie depicts the sport of baseball. And so, you know, here we can talk about the play itself. We can talk about, you know, some of the background stuff of, you know, just what we think or what we know from the movie itself. You know, I've got a couple here as well that just sort of like changed how, you know, people might view the movie, or like how, you know, the directors or anyone involved in the movie would change things to sort of like make it, make the actors seem like they were better than that they were. That involved moving the pitching mound, and so a real baseball stadium, the distance between the home plate and the pitching mound is 60 feet away, but to give the impression that Charlie Sheen's 85 mile per hour fastball was traveling 100 miles per hour, they moved the mound up 10 feet and shot from behind the plate so the viewer wouldn't notice the difference of distance.
That's clever. I would never have thought to do that. That's really clever. 85 miles per hour. It's pretty decent anyway, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
That's a little bit surprising having thought about it for 30 seconds.
Also, all of Wesley Snipes' running scenes are shown in slow motion to give the impression that he is running faster than he actually is.
Yeah, I read that. He's not that fast, but then other things I read said he was a tremendous athlete, and I'm sure we'll get into some of the other stuff he did in the movie later on. But I was a little bit confused by that. So is he a tremendous athlete or is he just slow as a wet weep? I don't know.
Yeah, I guess Wesley Snipes is slow, but his character is quick.
Yeah, very true.
This one I found like quite humorous. Apparently, Clue Hayward and the Duke from the New York Yankees in this movie are in violation of the appearance and dress code policy of the team. Apparently, they were not allowed to have long hair and Hayward was not allowed to wear a goatee. Those were apparently the rules of the New York Yankees.
Oh, so they were Yankees rules, not league rules.
Yeah.
Because I was about to say how they let Ricky Vaughn have that haircut if... if that was a league rule, but no, that makes more sense.
Yeah. And the final one that I have here before I'll open it up to you, and we might talk about like how the game itself was played. When Vaughn takes the mound in the playoff game, the home plate umpire, and this is, might be, just be for me because I am an umpire too, the home plate umpire can be seen brushing the home plate while facing towards the field. And us as umpires, we're trained to face away from, I'll face the spectators away from the mound, so back to the pitching mound when brushing dirt off the plate.
See, you could be, what's the correct term for it? You know, that you could be the logistics director along with your geography side hustle. You could be a logistics director for umpires in baseball and softball movies specifically.
I thought you were going to say, like, I could just be the actor as the
movie. Well, you could, of course, mate. The sky's the limit. I don't really have heaps for this because I'm, you know, I'm not a baseball guy. Just peek behind the curtain, mate. We watched some softball last night right here in Broken Hill. And I was just asking Jason a bunch of questions during the whole game. So I'm still learning the sport of softball and by extension baseball. I will say one thing that I read was when Willie Mays Hayes, Wesley Snipes, makes that incredible catch. It looks like it's going over the fence. He does the leap and sticks his glove out and it goes in there. That didn't come off the bat. That was just a guy off camera just chucking them up, and they just were chucking them higher and higher and higher and just seeing how high he could jump to catch the ball. And that was the one they went for. Apparently his hands were so quick that they had to enlarge the ball for full effect in the movie as well. So wow. Yeah, that's all I got, mate.
No, that's an incredible story.
Yeah.
I think like similarly to that, like some of the things that I found were that, you know, when I think it was when Ricky was, you know, just throwing a, putting a few pitches down in practice. And I think at one point he hits the like head off a, you know, mannequin or like the cardboard cutout.
Yeah.
That was actually just thrown from a pitching machine instead of Charlie Sheen's hand.
Yeah, right. Okay, that makes sense, doesn't it?
But yeah, I think like in terms of, you know, a lot of the other players in terms of whether it was training montages or during the games, like I think that they did really well to get that, you know, whether it was pitching, whether it was base running, whether it was hitting, and just, yeah, the whole thing about it. I think that, you know, what really stood out to me in this film, and I think like, you know, I hold it in like high stead in terms of it being a movie, is because like it does portray the sport really well. I think that, you know, you get all like the shots, and I know like, yeah, we talked about like how they slowed it down in parts when Wesley Snipes' character was running, but like I think that that's still like, you know, the scenes of, you know, base runners running or like the mental stuff, you know, whether it was between base runners and fielders or catchers and batters, or, you know, even just like pitcher and catcher as well, like I think they captured that really well. And, you know, just the progress of like how a baseball game might go depending on the situation.
Yeah. I mean, once again, from my limited experience, I thought it was pretty good. I don't know. Did they use any like old footage from games in this movie?
I don't think it was any old footage. I think it was just like that stuff at the start of like the newspaper looking clippings. And I don't know if that was, you know, old footage or not, because, you know, they sort of had sometimes footage playing and then like it would just turn into a screen capture and, you know, be plastered as an image on a front page of a newspaper or something. And so, yeah, I don't know if those particular scenes of that particular, of those particular games were old footage or not. I don't think so, because like I feel like in at least like one of them, you know, like there were just too many like varying camera angles, and to me, like, you know, it seemed like those camera angles were a bit like ahead of its time as well to portray like the 40s or the 50s.
Right, yeah.
And so like that was like, yeah, that's what I thought, like especially from those you know, that opening montage of those clippings.
To your point about it, you know, looking really authentic and good on the screen, I think I read that you know, much like some of the other movies we've talked about, specifically the one that springs to mind is A League of Their Own. The cast went to a version of spring training before the film. The director insisted on playing catch with all the actors before he would give the green tick for casting and stuff. So I think that all adds to it, looking really authentic.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, like, similarly, we talked about this in Any Given Sunday last week as well, how some of the main cast list were former or, American football players, whether it was at an NFL level or a college level or something else. And so I think that that's what this film does as well. Like, it has a couple of former major league players in, main roles as well. And so I think that, yeah, to your point, like, it definitely does add a bit of authenticity. And I mean, we mentioned as well, Harry Doyle, the sportscaster. Like, I think just like incorporating so many important people who, are highly regarded, are sort of well known within baseball at this level as well. I think it does bring up that authenticity, and, people sort of like really connect with the movie a lot more if they can sort of see it sort of relating to real life in a way as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it helped, and I'm sure we'll get to this in the casting, but there was a couple of, pretty decent high school players that that were cast. Charlie Sheen, we've mentioned it already. He could actually throw 85 miles per hour. So, I think, I think we're making the same point here. It definitely adds to the enjoyment of the movie, because there's nothing worse. And we've seen some stinkers like of sports being portrayed terribly. You mentioned Any Given Sunday, and geez, we've given that episode a hell of a shout out in this episode here. So please give it a listen. It's a good one. But the footy scenes in Any Given Sunday, they were a little bit on the nose, and Dan speaks to it a lot better than I could, or probably you as well. But as far as baseball goes, if I may say, they hit it out of the park.
All right, we've sort of alluded that we will talk about the actors and the characters now, so we actually will. And so I will run you through the cast list, and I might not get to everybody, but it was a pretty diverse and varied cast, and there's a lot of different characters as well. And so I'll run you through probably the main ones, but I mean, I'll probably end up telling you every single one as well, but because they're all pretty, main characters in their own right as well. And so we had Tom Berenger as Jake Taylor, who was a veteran catcher with bad knees. We had Charlie Sheen as Ricky Wild Thing Vaughn, a cocky young pitcher. We had Corbin Burnson as Roger Dorn, a third baseman. Margaret Witten played Rachel Phelps, the team's owner. James Gammon was Lou Brown, the Cleveland Indians manager. We had Renee Russo as Lynn Westland, who was Jake Taylor's ex-girlfriend. Bob Ecker as Harry Doyle, the sports commentator for the Indians. Wesley Snipes as Willie Mays Hayes, the team's center fielder. Charles Cyphers as Charlie Donovan, the general manager. Chelsea Ross as Eddie Harris, who was also a veteran pitcher. We had Dennis Haysbert as Pedro Serrano, an outfielder. And we'll get into a couple of the others as well, who, in terms of, just coaches and other players who were major league players. But I think those were the main cast members throughout this movie. So Stewie, while mentioning any of those or anyone else who featured in this movie, what did you think of the cast list overall? And if there's anyone that you want to single out, do so.
I thought, and remember, you got to remember this movie's 33 years old now at this point, so it's very much from a different time. But I thought the cast was actually fucking sensational. I really dug it. Tom Berenger, he really had that man with terrible knees run down pat in that last scene. Charlie Sheen, fantastic. He was good in this movie. By all accounts, he took steroids for 2 months so he could throw that fastball. So talk about commitment to the role. One person I wanted to point out was what was the name of the guy who played the coach?
The guy that played the coach was James Gammon.
I've got to tell you, man, that guy is a fucking legend. He's so good. His voice, just something about his voice just I can't explain it. It was transcendent when I was watching the movie. I was just transfixed on everything he said. I'm not going to try and do an impression, but just his one-liners, like, we're all out of towel, he says to the owner at one point. Oh, man, it's just the dry comedy that I love from the coach there. He was fantastic.
All right, you guys, let's listen up. We won a game yesterday. And if we win one today, that's two in a row. We win one tomorrow, that's called a winning streak. It has happened before. So let's see some hustle. Let's jack it up a little.
And, you know Jason, and I guess now all the fans are going to know. I love Rene Russo. So give me Rene Russo any day.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I agree with you with every actor that you pointed out there. I think that James Gammon as Lou Brown, the manager, I think that, you know, yeah, he sort of wasn't, you know, your hard-nosed manager that you would expect from a lot of other sports films. And, you know, yeah, you had that sort of accent from him as well. And, you know, you just wouldn't expect that from a manager of sort of a sports team at the same time. And it definitely reminded me of, you know, the sort of like caricature of, you know, a lot of sports people as well. You know, like, I don't know, like, I'm just remembering like a Simpsons episode where like they play baseball and like, you know, a couple of former players appear on like this particular team. And I think that, like, you know, I look at that and I think, like, you know, James Gammon like gets that down pat. And so, like, I think if I can like sort of like relate the two in terms of James Gammon playing a manager of a baseball team and then like the depictions of you know, these baseball players and, you know, a show like The Simpsons where these players are playing themselves, then, like, I think that James Gammon did a good job.
Absolutely. He had some terrific one-liners. Just before you go on there, Jason, while we're still on James Gammon, I love at the start when the general manager calls him and he's working at the tire shop. He goes, oh, I don't know. Going to have to think about it. I've got a guy on the other line who wants a set of white walls, so let me call you back. And he hangs up on the GM. It just sets the scene for his character perfectly. It was really good. I really enjoyed it.
Tire World.
Oh, Lou. This is Charlie Donovan with the Cleveland Indians.
How would you like to manage the Indians this year?
I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know? This is a chance to manage in the big leagues.
Let me think it over, will you, Charlie? I got a guy on the other line about some white walls. I'll talk to you later.
Yeah, I think even from that scene, like, I didn't really expect him to, like, take the job. Like, nothing really said, like, you know, yes, I'll take the job. And, like and then he was just in the job. So, yeah. But, yeah, I think that, like, all the characters on the team, like, you know, they all came together really well to portray baseball as, like, and, you know, these, like, you know, past it, I guess, baseball players at the same time and as well, like you mentioned, you know, Tom Berenger as the catcher with the bad knees and the bad run, you know, Ricky with his like wild flair, not being able to pitch well, as a result of, you know, just needing glasses, yeah, others, you know, not being able to field correctly, and all that. And so I think that, you know, they sort of yeah, came together to portray a team that was sort of like, yeah, of like have-beens, past it, sort of misfits at the same time. And it worked, really.
Yeah, absolutely. A bunch of ragtag misfits. I think it'd be remiss of us if we don't take some time to, you know, well, take a little bit more time to talk about Wesley Snipes as Willie Mays Hayes as well. I think he absolutely nailed that role. Mm-hmm. And in lieu of casting What Ifs, I will say that he didn't return for the sequel. Omar Epps took that role in the sequel, which was a little bit disappointing. But I think he was a pretty big star by the time Major League 2 came around and didn't want to play second fiddle to Tom Berenger, I suppose.
No, definitely not. And yeah, you mentioned it before as well, though, but Charlie Sheen, he did take steroids to prepare for the role. He believed that taking steroids would cause him to increase his fastball to 85 miles an hour. But yeah, I think that you also mentioned that he was a high school pitcher. He was offered a baseball scholarship to the University of Kansas as well. In the movie, he threw a 101 mile per hour fastball. But in reality, Sheen could mostly throw in the high 80s. And so, again, you know, I think that that was true in the movie as well. Like, he constantly got around like the mid to high 80s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Incredible that he took steroids. I've never heard of baseball players taking steroids to improve their games.
No, I don't think Ricky the Wild Thing Vaughn would be in the Baseball Hall of Fame.
You could say he set a trend, perhaps.
Yeah. But actually, I want to go back to Charlie Sheen too, because, like, you know, I think that in the 80s as well, like, he sort of played all these sort of bad boy characters, I guess. And that was the same with Ricky Vaughn. You know, from the first scene that you get of him, where he's in prison and he's like, you know, I think it'll be hard for me to make the tryouts because, you know, he's locked up. And, you know, just like his overall persona, his overall dress, you know, he's got the haircut, he's got the piercing, he's always wearing, you know, no sleeves, you know, sort of, you know, he's just dressing up and is wearing a leather jacket as well, like, you know, a no sleeve leather jacket, which he still doesn't even like to wear, which complains about. But I think that, yeah, like that bad boy character, like, you know, you sort of get that with Charlie Sheen, especially throughout the 80s, and like even like now, like he's sort of like still synonymous of playing those like characters who are pretty like sleazy as well. And, you know, we definitely got that part of his character in Major League as well.
Absolutely. And turns out he wasn't playing a role. He was just being himself the whole time.
But I think that, you know, the popularity of Wild Thing, and we saw this in the movie, and I think that, you know, it's still referenced, the character's still referenced now. Obviously, it was a part of the sequels. But I think, like, even, you know, fans in Cleveland as well, like, you know, relate to this movie, obviously referencing the Cleveland Indians, but they also relate to Wild Thing. I know that in the 2016 World Series, they actually wanted, or Cleveland fans actually wanted, Charlie Sheen to throw out the first pitch in one of those games as his Wild Thing persona.
Wow.
But I think that the Indians owners at the time had other people in mind.
Oh, right. That's a huge missed opportunity.
Yeah.
I don't know if Charlie Sheen's brand had been damaged by then, though. I'm not sure if that's before, you know, winning and all the rest of it, that he went through a few years back. So maybe that had something to do with it as well.
Yeah, but we definitely saw the Wild Thing's influence and sort of allure in the movie. And I think that that was mostly prevalent in that final game when he comes out of the bullpen and, you know, there's music blaring. You know, the song that's playing is, I think, a song called The Wild Thing, or at least like that was the lyrics as well.
Give me Vaughn.
You want Vaughn?
I know he hadn't done very well against this guy, but I got a hunch he's due.
I hate this fucking song.
You know, that scene went on for ages. The fans were getting involved, shouting his name, singing along. And I think that, like, you know, you definitely do get that a lot with Major League now as well. Like, and, you know, walkout songs aren't just for batters as well. Like, pitchers have walkout songs now too. And, you know, if relief pitchers closes. And so I think that, you know, coming back to how they depict the sport, like, I think that that's true. But, you know, Stewie, if you were to have a walkout song, if you were coming into the game, you know, bottom of the ninth, trying to save the game for your team, and you were coming out of the bullpen, what song would you want to be coming out to the mound for with Blair?
Okay. So given that specific circumstance you've just put me in, I've changed my song on the fly. And another... you know, flashback to the 80s and the 80s rock ballad, pretty famous one. I don't think it's a ballad at all. It's just a rock song. It's called The Final Countdown by Europe would be my one, I reckon. How about you, Jace? What would be your walkout song?
Yeah, mine is by a US band called Icon for Hire. I feel like I've sort of like had this idea in mind, as if it would be my walk up song if I was a batter as well. But I think that this also goes hand in hand if I was a pitcher in the situation that I presented before. And I think like, yeah, just the lyrics for this song, it's just about, coming up to the plate or coming to the mound and, being what, others would sort of like least expect and sort of like blindsiding people into how well you might perform and stuff and just like, serving your punches and, yeah.
Okay, cool. I like it.
If anyone wants to listen to the song Icon for Hire's Blindside, I definitely encourage you to. All right, just continuing on and finishing up with the actors and characters. We've mentioned Charlie Sheen, but we'll go on to a couple of the actual MLB players to appear in this movie. And so we had Steve Yeager, Pete Yukovich, and Willie Mueller. Yeager was the 1981 World Series MVP for the Dodgers, while Yukovich won the Cy Young Award in 1982 with the Brewers and is also on the team's Wall of Honor. Mueller appeared in six total games for the Brewers, five in 1978 and one in 1981. But yeah, it's cool that I mean that they could sort of get these people into the movie. Yeah, they served sort of a purpose and a sort of a role. Yeager was the coach for the actors in training them for the movie. He also served as a stunt double for Tom Berenger in many scenes when Jake Taylor, the character, would make a throw from home plate or be in a home plate collision, as well as playing a third base coach as well. And so Steve Yeager had a couple of roles, I guess, in the movie.
That's interesting. I guess not so much for the third baseman, but for the catcher, I guess having that mask on definitely helps him maybe just step in for Tom Berenger where he can't quite cut the mustard.
All right, we get to the part of this episode, or an episode now, where we ask a prompt: if you could have a baseball movie get made, what would it be and why? So, Stewie, have you come up with an idea for this particular segment?
I resent that. Of course, I have. Jason, all right. I'm sick of this. I'm being bullied on this podcast week after week, suggesting that I'm never prepared. Okay. And I'm definitely not buying time to think of something. Okay. So, yeah. Continued outrage.
Right, my idea. No, you're not getting out of it that easy.
All right, so my movie, mate. I've got a bit left field here, if I may say. Just taking a bit of a swing, might be a miss, it might be a home run. Who knows? I'm going to go with Major League Four. And what we do in Major League Four is we get all the cast back together again. They've all found themselves in a retirement home, and the bitchy owner of the Indians. Somehow she's got an ownership of the retirement home. Okay. She owns three or four retirement homes and she wants to demolish them all and just build one big retirement castle. But they like their retirement home. They don't like it. So they challenge her. They say, let's have a baseball game. Okay. We'll have a baseball game, baseball series against the other retirement homes. And if we win, we get to keep our retirement home. She tries every trick in the book. Right, every trick in the book. She takes a leaf out of the Monty Burns page, tries to get a bunch of MLB players in. Somehow they find a way, and the Indians team of 1989 in the fictional world, Wild Thing Vaughn, everybody, they manage to get it done, and it's just a feel-good romp.
I think that you're onto a winner there. I really do. I really do. Because like even at the end of this movie, we don't know if they won the eventual World Series, and so they might not have, and so maybe this retirement home World Series might be the win that they were looking for in the end.
Absolutely. That would be good. Maybe we could get Wesley Snipes back.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah.
He can come back. But yeah, I think that it is interesting because you mentioned that as your Major League Four idea. A lot of people, there has been a Major League Three that was released in 1998, and but it didn't really have the same cast list or You know, I don't think that they did, maybe one person. But, you know, a lot of fans of the franchise don't really believe Major League Back to the Minors, which is Major League 3, part of the series. And so, you know, maybe your idea could essentially be my Major League 3. But yeah, Major League was originally followed up by Major League 2. 1 year after the sequel's release, the real-life Cleveland Indians would actually win their first American League pennant since 1954. And some fans essentially referred to that real-life event as Major League 3.
How good. That's awesome.
Very nice. Well, I think that, you know, by now, you know, you sort of associate that, you know, I might have a good idea about, you know, what baseball movies I want and, you know, come into here with a few different ideas each time and, you know, really, you know, like present them as, you know, as if I've thought of them for ages. And I'm definitely not buying time myself here. But no, but I think that it is really interesting because, like, you know, like you make a point, like I think that all of my ideas too have been, you know, real life situations or like real life events. And, you know, you sort of associate that, and we talked about it at the start too, like the tropes, you know, they're pretty done. And like, you know, like what more could you have in terms of something that is an original concept? And so, like, I don't mind going to, you know, real life events and, you know, finding out, you know, what actually happened or having that sort of like translated on the big screen, that sort of like those sorts of events or anything like that. And so, yeah, no, I think it's good points that you're sort of raising, and I'm definitely buying some more time for myself as well. No, I think, like, yeah, my idea, you know, we've talked about sort of like closers and pitchers in this one. Mine is probably about Liam Hendricks. So he's a current Australian MLB player at the moment. He plays for the White Sox. And he, you know, to me, like, you know, and I might be biased as well because he's Australian, but like he has a great sort of like closing, walking out montage. And, you know, every time that I see it, like I even get pumped up, even if I'm just watching videos of it. And so I think that, yeah, maybe something to do with like the creation of or the concept of like walk out songs, you know, like who sort of first floated the idea of what the first one was, and just sort of like how it might have been viewed. Like, I'm sure there were some people that were like, oh, that's a shit idea. Like, you know, don't want that in baseball, but you know, it's obviously something that happens all around now. And so I think just, yeah, walk out songs and sort of how they're chosen and how they've progressed over time.
I think that's a good idea, mate. And you know, I bet you there was a little bit of pushback when it was first introduced, but 100%. Look at the Indians fans in Major League. It's resonating with that crowd and continues to resonate to this day.
All right, we've come to the end of the episode now. So, Stu, would you like to share your social media handles and anywhere else our listeners can find you?
Yeah, absolutely, mate. Hit me up on Twitter at StuIsSickOfIt. I'm always down for, you know, just a chat or a spirited debate. Or if you just want to hurl abuse at me, I'm pretty good at hurling abuse back. So, you know, come at me. Also, Stewie the Sports Guy on Instagram and Twitter. You can find me there, mate.
And you can find me on both Twitter, Instagram, or TikTok at Jace Irves. You've been listening to Goals on Film. You can find Goals on Film on Twitter and Instagram at Goals on Film Pod. Goals on Film is part of the Edge of the Crowd network. You can find Edge of the Crowd on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, LinkedIn, and TikTok at Edge of the Crowd. You can also view any of our stories, be it sport, culture, or politics, on our website, www.edgeofthecrowd.com. Until next week, thanks for listening.